Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we're excited to have Dr. Mike Chamberlain, the Wild Turkey Doc from the University of Georgia, on today. And Mike was kind enough to take some time and join me for a podcast, and I really appreciate that. He's very busy, and he took some time to talk turkey hunting and about the wild turkey with me, and I think you guys will enjoy this informative episode. And turkey season is upon us. I'm excited to get out Saturday as we open up here in the north zone of Florida, and a lot of folks have already been out with youth and things like that, I think, in a few states. So it's exciting. It is here. So let's be ready. If there's any last minute work you need to do on calls or your gun or loads or whatever, you know, let's be prepared as possible. And it's exciting. So I do want to give a quick disclaimer, warning, whatever. My voice was absolutely terrible. I lost my voice, but see, there you go. But I tried to just get the questions out there and let Dr. Chamberlain go. So hopefully it's not too bad of a listen for you, but just wanted to give that quick warning that my voice is definitely rough in the episode. So hope you guys enjoy this one with Dr. Mike Chamberlain, and give him a follow on Instagram at Wild Turkey Doc. So follow along with the research and things that he's doing. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Let's jump in. Welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. We're excited today to be joined by Mike Chamberlain, also known as the Wild Turkey Doc. So, Mike, I appreciate you taking some time today.
Not a problem. Good to be with you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And just starting off, I just kind of wanted to ask, you know, how you got into turkey hunting initially, and, you know, how that led to, obviously, life of studying wild turkeys.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Virginia, and we had a fall and a spring hunting season, and I had buddies that were turkey hunters, and I mean, we hunted everything, but when we could turkey hunt, we did. And I wouldn't have ever called myself a turkey hunter back then. It was just, I hunted everything I could hunt, and turkeys were one of the critters that we chased. And then kind of fast forward to, you know, I went to Virginia Tech and did an undergraduate degree. And as I was finishing up, I was offered a position in graduate school. And one of the options I had was to work on a turkey project. And I decided, I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. And so I said, yeah, I'll take that project. And the rest is kind of history. I ended up going to the Mississippi Delta, which is, if you've never been there, is a pretty interesting place. It's hot, it's buggy, it's muddy. And worked there for a few years as a student. I then was offered another position, this time as a PhD student, working in another part of Mississippi on turkeys. And I did that. So that ended up being about 6 years of study. And then I left there and went to LSU, Louisiana State University, as a faculty member, and was able to start studying turkeys as soon as I got there. Meanwhile, you know, the turkey hunting bug kind of bit me like it does a lot of other people. And because of the fact that I studied the bird, I kind of had a different lens that I look at the bird through, and that's kind of continued for, gosh, you know, 20, 25 years now. I've been actually more than almost 30 years. I've been studying turkeys and I've been hunting them for longer. So, it's been an interesting career path for sure.
Yes, sir. That sounds pretty interesting. And, you know, just with that time frame that your study has really covered, you know, you've kind of witnessed a lot of, I don't know if resurgence is the right word, but, you know, the NWTF has done a lot, you know, in the past 50 years for wild turkeys, you know, where you've been, have you seen kind of how numbers have either gone up or down or how things like that, like in WTF, have affected things?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've, you know, if I go back and think about when I was young, you know, when I was a teenager, I remember fall hunting, it was pretty common to see turkeys, and spring season, of course, I didn't know what I was doing when I was young. And so I spun my wheels a lot. And, but we didn't have a lot of turkeys back then. And then, you know, all of a sudden the 1990s hit and restoration was starting to wrap up in a lot of areas, and turkey populations were exploding. And everywhere I went, you know, I saw birds, I hunted birds, I killed birds. And then things started to, at least in my eyes, and the data bear this out, you know, in the 2000s, things started to turn a little bit. And by 2010, 2011, 12, if you look across many, many states, there were issues with production. Populations were starting to exhibit declines, and it was kind of right under our nose. We didn't really realize what was going on. And, you know, now 10 years later, it's apparent, very clear, that populations have declined in a lot of areas, and not all, but many areas. And, you know, now that's kind of prompted a flurry of research and science to try to understand what's going on, and how can agencies and private landowners, you know, work together to stem those declines and see if we can alter the kind of the trajectory that we seem to be on.
Right. And, you know, that necessarily wasn't in the list of questions that I sent over to you, but if you want to add anything right here on either what you've seen specifically or anything you recommend or thoughts you have on it, you're certainly welcome to. If not, we can move on, but just wanted to, kind of since it's going that way, I was just gonna make that available if you want to comment any further on the current situation and direction.
I mean, the bottom line is, you know, if you look across the species range, you know, turkeys are dealing with a lot of things, whether it be habitat loss, degradation of the remaining habitats, conversion of habitats, such as, you know, loss of hardwood forest and those being replaced with more intensively, you know, kind of pine dominated type forest. We see predation issues all over the species range, predator communities that may be a little different than they were in some areas than, you know, say 20 or 30 years ago. Disease issues, you know, we hunt turkeys primarily during their breeding season, which is unique for game birds in North America. So you kind of factor all that together, and there's a complex series of issues facing the bird, and that has agencies, you know, scratching their head. And it has people like me doing, you know, a lot of field work trying to understand exactly what is going on. And what we see is that it's variable in space. What may be most influencing your population may be very different than some of the issues facing a population, you know, in the next state or even a few counties away. So we got a lot of work to do, but we'll get there. We've been down this road before with turkeys. We've restored populations before, and we've learned a lot about the bird. But we're now in a situation where we're having to kind of learn new things, because birds are living in landscapes that are very different than they were 20 or 30 years ago, and we're going to have to adjust how we, you know, how we do our own activities and see if we can. If we can right the ship, if you will.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And where I live in the Jacksonville, Florida area, I mean, we're just growing exponentially. And, you know, I can't help but look at some of the new neighborhoods that pop up and think, you know, that used to be a place where turkeys lived and deer lived and whatever else, you know.
Yeah.
Not to mention that, you know, things like raccoon hunting and stuff like that are less and less popular.
and our nest predators and that type of thing that just aren't being hunted, and therefore, you know, kind of getting out of balance. I'm sure there's so many things involved.
There sure are. Yeah. And Florida's, you know, Florida's a good example. If you look at Florida, it's kind of it magnifies what's going on everywhere. But if you look at the Florida Peninsula, you know, like you mentioned, it's just, you know, urban growth is just exploding down in Florida. And, you know, you've got turkeys that are living on a peninsula, and, you know, urban sprawl is encroaching and taking habitat, and, you know, subdivisions and infrastructure and highways and rights of way and all these things that either remove habitat or fragment it. And, you know, the world, if you will, is closing in on turkeys. And if you kind of think about it, and the same issues are facing turkeys in other areas, but Florida is pretty unique because, as you know, it's such a destination place for so many people for various reasons, that aren't turkey related. It really makes me think that if we don't prioritize turkeys in Florida more so than we have in the past, you know, things don't look good in many parts of Florida, just because it, you know, there's so many competing land uses that are economically, you know, more important, frankly, than we've made turkeys, and we're going to have to make them a priority to see change.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I kind of want to shift gears and talk a little bit about turkey hunting. You know, could you talk a little bit about how you would scout, or what we might call, you know, locate birds? This is something that came up on an episode I recently did. The guy I was talking to had listened to some of your stuff and said it affected how he called, or if he called, in some situations like that. So just kind of want to get your take on, you know, scouting, locating turkeys, and anything you want to go into there.
Yeah, I'm you know, the way I do it may not be right, but it works for me. You know, depending on where I'm at, if I'm in the east where, you know, it's forested and it's hard to see birds, hard to pattern birds, I tend to try to figure out areas where they consistently roost, where I can hear birds. And if my time permits, I try to figure out where they want to go without me, you know, being part of their agenda. In other words, you know, what's on their day-to-day agenda when they fly to, if they're in this particular roosting, you know, location, what do they tend to do? That, not always, because, you know, turkeys are unpredictable at times, but, you know, if I hear a bird here, where does he tend to go? Does he tend to head north? Does he, you know, if I leave him 2 hours later, do I see him, you know, down the road in a field, or do I, does he loop back and I end up, you know, if I just sit tight, do I hear birds that are circling back through particular areas? I tend to try to figure out where birds want to be. And maybe that's because I'm not a world champion caller, but I've just found it so much easier to be effective if you already are where they want to be, or you're in an area that they're using, that's already on their daily agenda. It's a lot simpler to get in the game with them, you know, if you're not where they don't want to be. And what we see with turkeys is pretty, we see this with a lot of animals actually, but if you look at GPS data, they revisit places a lot, and they walk the same areas a lot. I mean, you know, we've got data on toms that they literally seem to walk the same tracks. Like, they'll go west, and then when they come back east, they're coming through the same areas. Knowing that, I try to figure out, you know, where those areas may be in a, you know, in a place that I can hunt. And if I can't strike a bird, or even if I can, and it doesn't appear that I'm, you know, I'm really on his agenda when he flies down, I'll try to predict and get in those places. And sometimes, you know, that requires you sitting tight until 9 or 10 o'clock, but I've killed a lot of turkeys later in the morning, and it can be successful if you're willing to sit it out. You know, right. Sometimes it doesn't. I go home a lot. I go home with my tail kicked a lot, but, But figuring out where they want to go and where they want to be is huge. And I think that is even more helpful for some of the Western subspecies that move a lot during the day, you know, like Merriam's, for instance. Those jokers, man, they fly down and they can cover some ground. And if you already kind of have some intel on where they want to head or where they want to be, it may take you all day, but you can end up being successful on a bird that moves a lot more, you know, on a daily basis than say an Eastern does.
Right. Right. Yeah. And one of the things he mentioned was kind of like, kind of along those lines, once season opens, you know, your research has shown that, you know, the birds kind of shut up. Is that kind of one of the things that, you know, you've done?
Yeah, we see pretty clearly on heavily hunted sites that birds, they curtail their gobbling. Mm. And a lot of it is confined to the roost site. Once they fly down, you know, they shut up. And that's not, you know, that's on heavily hunted sites. We have some data on non-hunted sites, and they don't do that. They gobble most of the morning. And we have some data on some kind of lightly hunted sites, and the pattern is not as dramatic as when you get a lot of hunting pressure. And we know that that's not just vocal birds being shot. It's the remaining birds are changing their behavior. And we've all, I mean, I think any turkey hunter that's hunted in the Southeast particularly, if you've been on public land, you've seen this with your own eyes. I mean, the season gets 2 or 3 weeks into the game, and you know, a lot of gobbling activity is in the tree, and then it's quiet. And that's what our data show on these areas that get a lot of pressure, to the point where, you know, in some extreme cases, they just stop gobbling, well before the season ends. And we've actually got some really interesting data on some sites where, they'll curtail gobbling a lot. And then all of a sudden when the season ends, it ramps back up again, which is pretty funny. Clearly indicating that, you know, they sense the pressure. And we also have just recently published some work showing that, that they also change how they move in response to hunting pressure. They both, you know, both toms and hens, actually, they tend to shift away from areas that hunters are using for access points, roads, trails, fire breaks. They tend to move away from things that we use to get into the woods. And then by the time the season ends, when the pressure is really a lot lower, they kind of come back to what they were doing when the season opened. So clearly the bird senses hunting pressure and human activity, and they react to it.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you if, in your opinion, the walking in and out or the gunshots or good or bad calling or whatever, if any of those had a bigger impact, in your opinion.
I think it's just, you know, it's hard to tease that, all that stuff out. I think it's just, it's all of that kind of wrapped together. You know, the bird, they spend their entire year dealing with us, whether it's deer hunters or small game hunters. And, you know, if they're living on areas with vehicular traffic and such, they deal with people all the time. But then all of a sudden, the amount of activity in their home ranges really ramps up come turkey season. And, you know, they sense that increased pressure. They, you know, things that are drawing their attention are now suddenly associated with being bumped by a hunter or hearing a vehicle or, you know, encountering a guy walking down a trail or whatever it is. And it doesn't take them very long to react to that pressure. And that's what I was just mentioning. I mean, we see it in the gobbling data. We see it in the movement data. They sense the pressure pretty quickly. They change how they behave, and then they go on about their lives. By the time the season closes, they're pretty much back to what they were doing before.
Right. No, that's definitely good info to think about. And, you know, I'm a relatively new hunter in general. been hunting about 5 years, and the first time I ever went turkey hunting, I just sat up against a tree, kind of this little clearing, and I did not even own a turkey call at that time, and one flew down right at light. It was a hen. Feet hit the ground and she took off, and I don't even know what I did. I'm sure I jumped or whatever, but anyway, a year or so later, actually had a friend kind of tell me where to go and kind of set me up, and I was able to actually kill my first and only turkey so far. And then last few years I've seen some, but you know, hadn't got in range or whatever. But just kind of wonder what kind of advice you give to a new or even intermediate turkey hunter, whether it's a mindset or strategy or, you know, just some things that you've observed over the years that you would pass along to somebody kind of just getting into it.
Yeah, I would do kind of what you did. If you know other people that turkey hunt that may have more experience, that may be able to, you may tag along with them and kind of see how they do things and glean information from them as far as strategy or how they call, even if it's not successful that day, being around other people that are doing the same thing, whether it's turkey hunting or anything else in life, you gain different perspectives. I hunt with people, new people every year, and I learn something every day that I'm in the field with somebody else, because we all have our different ways of doing things. And the other thing I would tell people that are just getting into turkey hunting is just, you have to go. You have to get in the woods, and you have to pay attention and understand that the learning curve can be, it's not always, but it can be very steep in turkey hunting, because if you don't know kind of quote unquote what you're doing, and you're kind of learning from what you read and what you listen to, you still have to go put it into practice, and sometimes it can be frustrating. So I tell everyone that asks me this question is just go, man, get in the woods and listen to birds, pay attention to birds. If you can watch birds, do it. Think about the bird outside of just the spring, learn about its ecology, read about it, how they behave, and try not to just focus on popular articles and stuff, dig up some literature. I mean, and it's easy to find books that talk about turkey ecology. That learning about what makes an animal tick makes you a better hunter, regardless of what species you're hunting. And turkeys are no different. If you know about their behavior, and you know about how their annual cycle works, and you know what they eat, and you know how far they move, and you know what the range size is, if you know all of that stuff, and you start thinking about, hey, this is the property I hunt, this is what I'm seeing, you can start backing into becoming a better hunter quickly, because you know something about the bird, not just how to hunt the bird. So that's what I encourage people to do, is learn about the bird while you're learning how to hunt the bird, and you'll realize that it all comes together more quickly if you understand the bird itself and not just how do you kill it. Right. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had a few people ask me for my opinion. I'm like, well, I am no expert, but one thing I would say is definitely go. That's my advice to anybody who wants to get into hunting. Just try it, And I've told a couple guys might consider a box call, because I've tried with some mouth calls and I hadn't figured them out yet. So
slate calls are great too for beginners, because you can be really quiet on the slate call, and you can be subtle, and you can do really subtle clucks and purrs and things on a slate call. And if you listen, if you sit and listen to audio recordings of turkeys, you can kind of see how being able to use different types of calls is important, because they have a lot of different vocalizations. And that's what I tell beginners that ask me is, you know, practice on a mouth call, but don't be afraid to experiment with other calls. Like you just said, a box call or slate call or anything that will allow you to be real subtle, and you can sit and practice at home, you know, unless you have a wife or girlfriend and they don't like you doing that, which is what happens in my house. As soon as I whip the calls out and start practicing, which I've already been doing, you know, I get told you need to go stand in the yard or something, but practice, you know, the analogy, practice makes perfect. It's not really true with turkey hunting and turkey calling, because you don't have to be a grand champion caller to call a turkey up to kill it. If you listen to turkeys, they all have different voices. They're very, very unique. And we think with certainty that they recognize each other's calls, and that's how they help identify which birds they're talking to. But, you know, you'll hear birds that you think sound terrible. Well, in their world, you know, terrible is a relative term. So just, you know, get your technique and practice and learn, you know, how to use different calls, and don't be afraid to experiment and try different things when you're out there. That's what I did when I was learning to turkey hunt. And I still do that sometimes. I still try to do things sometimes that are a bit off the wall. And honestly, sometimes it works, and it's pretty shocking when you try something, you think, man, this is crazy that I'm trying this, and you end up striking a bird or even better, you know, killing a bird that you otherwise wouldn't have killed unless you thought outside the box.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say, of course, some of it is relative, obviously, but a lot of the hens I've heard in person, you know, were much quieter than I imagined from seeing like calling videos and things like that.
Oh yeah. Yes.
I was surprised how soft they were clucking and everything. Like, wow.
Yeah. If you listen to, and they're, you know, some of the more popular turkey hunters on, you know, on social media and TV shows and that type of thing, which I'm not, but, they call very subtly, and I hunt with some folks that do the same. And I actually try to call very quietly unless I'm in a situation where I'm trying to, you know, be loud and strike up something at a distance. You know, if you listen to turkeys, you know, turkey trapping, for instance, when you hear birds that are communicating with each other as they're coming to you at a net site, it's almost not audible. I mean, they are so quiet in how they communicate, and their hearing is very acute, the way their ears work. You don't have to call loud for them to hear you. So I'll often tell people, this is my technique. Once a bird's here, you know, has heard me, I'm done. Unless he tells me through his behavior that I need to call again. Once he's acknowledged that I'm there, I tend not to call much, if at all. And let him do what he's going to do until he tells me otherwise. And yeah, I have a buddy that I turkey hunt with a lot, and he's the quietest caller I've ever been around. His calls are so quiet that you really can't hardly hear them when you're sitting there with him, yet birds will come right to the gun barrel sometimes. So I think as hunters in general, we call too loud most of the time. And I have to constantly talk myself down from doing that, because we like, you know, it's human nature. We kind of like to call loud and like to call too much, and we like to hear ourselves. And a lot of times you're better off just to be quiet.
Yep. No doubt about it. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time to join me today. Before I let you go, if there's anywhere you want to direct folks to, whether online or books or research projects or videos, social media, anywhere you'd want to direct people to find out more about, you know, your work or work you recommend on studying turkeys and anything else.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, I post a lot of information about turkeys on social media accounts. If you go to Instagram or Twitter and just search on Wild Turkey Doc, just Wild Turkey DOC, all one word, you'll find the post. I post on Facebook, but it's just under my name. So if you just type in Michael Chamberlain, you'll find me. Same information. If you're interested in research, you can just contact me by email. If you just get on the University of Georgia's homepage and type in my name, you'll find an email address. I'm more than happy to send information to people. Alternatively, I'm actually close to having a website set up that I'm going to archive everything that I've done on turkeys on that website. So that will soon be a one-stop shop, if you will, where you can find social media posts, articles I've written, podcasts I've been on, kind of to give you one place you can go and get a bunch of information about science and turkey research. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll have that rolled out here in the next few weeks and I can make that available to folks as well.
Okay. Very cool, man. Well, I really appreciate it once again. And, looking forward to turkey season and, good luck to you.
Yep. Same to you, man.
Thanks so much for listening today. I just want to give y'all a big thanks for following along and supporting and listening. Thanks for all those who've left ratings and reviews and those who followed along on Instagram. Appreciate y'all. And a big thank you to Dr. Mike Chamberlain for joining me in the episode today. Really enjoyed his insight and looking forward to getting turkey season kicked off. So just keeping the turkey series episodes rolling. It's been a lot of fun and a lot of info and a lot to learn, definitely for me, I'm sure for a lot of others. So we certainly appreciate those who've been following along and listening, and it's been good. So once again, thank you to Dr. Mike Chamberlain, and thank you to everyone who's following along. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate it and hope everyone has a good and successful turkey season. And as always, just want to leave you with this thought: honor God, work hard, and keep hunting.